Have you ever wondered what happens to all the data that's collected from you each day, from your credit card purchases, your membership card purchases, even to your browsing on the internet? Well, my next guest has thought a lot about it, and she's concerned, very concerned. Maybe by the end of this discussion, you'll be concerned too. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 289-1520. Catherine Albrecht is widely recognized as one of the world's leading experts on consumer privacy. She has testified before the Federal Trade Commission, the California State Legislature, the European Commission, the Federal Reserve Bank on consumer implications of the RFID technology. And she's given over 1,000 television, radio, and print interviews to news outlets all over the world. Her efforts have been featured on CNN, NPR, the CBS Evening News, Business Week, and the London Times, just to name a few. The Executive Technology Magazine recently named Catherine perhaps the nation's most outspoken privacy advocate. And Wired Magazine calls her the Erin Brockovich of RFID, director of CAPSIAN, and we'll talk to her about what that acronym stands for. She holds an undergraduate degree in international marketing and a master's degree in instructional technology. She's currently completing her doctorate in education at Harvard University with a research focus on consumer education and privacy. Welcome to the show, Catherine. How are you today?
Hey, Bill. I am doing great. It's wonderful to be on your program. And I got to tell you, there has been no better time to be a privacy advocate than today. I've been doing this work since 1999. I've actually gone on and earned that doctorate from Harvard in consumer education and spent years focused on trying to educate the public about the privacy issues that we face today in this high technology world. I have to say, for the last 10 years, I feel like I've been shouting from the rooftops into the wind and nobody could hear me. And the last couple of months, especially with some really high-profile changes at Facebook and at Google particularly, I think now finally the public is beginning to get the message and starting to look for some alternatives.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your degree from Harvard. Second of all, you may have been shouting, but it's not been into the woods. I've heard what you've had to say. And you are very, very much concerned about privacy and the RFID chips in particular. Now, RFID is an acronym. It stands for Radio Frequency Identification Chips. And many of the world's largest manufacturing companies would like to replace the barcode that we see on our products with these RFID chips. In fact, Walmart is insisting on RFID chips in the products that it buys from its vendors. What concerns do you have about RFID chips in particular?
Well, I got to say, the biggest concern, I think, is the fact that if you have an RFID enhanced driver's license, these are enhanced driver's licenses that are used in border states. So it's the thing they give you instead of a passport to get across the border. Believe it or not, if you have one of those in your pocket, your purse, your wallet, your backpack, wherever you're carrying it, and you stand in front, this is going to sound unbelievable, but it's true, you stand in front of the underwear shelf at Walmart, the shelf can read your driver's license.
And Catherine, you were telling us a story about how you can walk by the underwear shelf in Walmart and actually have the readers there read your RFID chip in your pocketbook, your identification there that's there. I've heard of stories where clever young people are getting RFID readers, which are commonly available in electronics magazines, and hanging out in coffee bars and hanging out in restaurants, and then just collecting the data from the RFID chips, giving off information from the customers who walk by, and then using that information for nefarious reasons. Is that a major concern? Should we be worried about something like that?
Absolutely, because the credit card companies that were in such a rush to issue these Wave and Go or PayPass credit cards, that are these contactless credit cards, they wanted to do it because they wanted you to be able to just wave your wallet at the scanner, because research has shown that you spend more money when you don't actually have to touch the card or when you don't actually have to go through the motions and go through the steps. So they figure they'd make a lot more money if they could make it a lot easier for people to pay with credit cards. But what they weren't thinking was about our security. And what we discovered, actually researchers from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst discovered that the leading credit card issuers were putting a microchip on there that had no encryption, no protection, and in fact they could even read them through people's mailboxes when they were being delivered in the envelope, the sealed envelope with your credit card in it, and get the person's full name, the full credit card number, and the expiration date. Everything you would need to make a purchase right off the card.
Very frightening, Catherine. So how can I tell if there's an RFID chip in something that I own?
Well, you'll see it on probably the most likely place you're going to find it is on a credit card in your wallet, a bank card, an ATM card. they will usually have a little symbol on them. It'll say Wave and Go or PayPass or, it'll have American Express Blue, I guess, has it, the clear one. You can sometimes even see the little microchip. You can hold it up to the light or take a strong pen light and hold it up and see the antenna, which looks like just a series of lines running around the outer edge. And then you should see them converge on a central microchip, and that would tell you that there's a microchip in there. On the credit cards, they're not hiding it. They're actually boasting, hey, it's Wave and Go, it's wonderful. You can call your credit card company if you're concerned and insist that they send you a card that does not have the microchip. When you're on the phone with them, they'll say, oh, well, we'll deactivate that feature. Tell them that's not good enough. I don't want you to just deactivate it on your end at the computer, meaning if somebody tries to use it, you won't accept the charge. I literally want you to issue me a different physical card because the card that you've given me can even be used to track me. So you got to be really firm with these guys, and I have found that if customers really understand what's going on, they can get those cards replaced.
My guest is Catherine Albrecht. We're talking about personal security in this new digital world. I guess the next question that I'd have to ask is, can I kill an RFID chip in something that I already own? Can I use a magnet to disable it, or can I pop it in a microwave to disable it, or even heat or something? What can I use to disable the microchip myself?
Well, if you've got it in a credit card, you can actually use a ball peen hammer. That's a hammer with a sharp point on it, and just bang it a couple of good times. That ought to break the microchip in the connections, the leads to the antenna. If it's in something else that you don't know if it has a microchip in it, it can be a little bit tougher. I don't recommend the microwave. It's hugely effective, but it also has a high likelihood of causing the object to catch on fire. RFID tags in the microwave are very flammable. So, yes, it will blow up, but it might do a little more than that as well. Magnets have no effect on RFID tags whatsoever. And in some cases, disabling the RFID tag may not even be such a good idea if the RFID tag is a fundamental part of the working of the object that you've got there. So I would say proceed with caution, but your best bet is just not to take something that has an RFID tag in it in the first place.
My guest is Catherine Albrecht, personal privacy expert, and Catherine is also the author of the book Spy Chips. Catherine, I want to change gears and get away from the RFID chips because you've certainly scared me enough with that and move on to another scary topic, which is Google. Google and I have had this ongoing relationship, I'd say, for over the last 10 years or so, where I go to Google and I type in just about any question or any thought that I might have. And, of course, Google has been collecting all of that information and aggregating it and turning around and selling that information to consumer companies and to advertisers who want to reach me. All of a sudden, I'm starting to be concerned about Google and my privacy. Is that something that I should be concerned about?
Yeah, not only is it something you should be concerned about, but I've actually devoted the last 3 or 4 years of my life to coming up with an alternative to Google, working with a company called StartPage, startpage.com, to provide a private portal to Google, to actual Google results, but that is private and doesn't record what you search for. And I'll spell that out because I always get a bunch of email afterwards. It's Start, like Start Protecting Your Privacy, S-T-A-R-T, page, startpage.com. And what happens when you go to Google, and for most people it's the home page on their browser, they automatically default to there anytime they want to look something up. Over 80% of American searches are done on Google. So normally when a thought crosses your mind, you say, gosh, what is that rash? Or, boy, I'm concerned my teenage son may be addicted to some kind of illegal drug, or my home may be going into foreclosure, or maybe I'm facing a bankruptcy. And we log on in what we think is the privacy of our own homes onto our own computers with the door shut and the shades drawn, and we think it is private. But what's actually happening is that Google is sitting there collecting all of that information, and as of March 1st, 2012, just 2 weeks ago, they have publicly stated that they are going to be capturing all of that information, not just what you do in the Google search engine, but all of the Gmail that you send and receive will be read, the keywords will be extracted from there, and they will put them in your personal file that they keep on every single person who uses the Internet. So that, I have to say, is extraordinarily disturbing. Google turns that information regularly over to the government, which you may say, well, that's good, we're stopping terrorists and criminals. But you also have to say, yeah, but there's been a lot of bad governments in the past who have really abused personal information that they obtained on people. And plus, it's really nobody's business. So if you want to look up the rash or drug addiction or marriage counseling or whatever it is, you have it. I believe you should have a total right to do that in complete and total privacy. You're not hurting anybody. And there is such a thing as privacy. We have to hang on to it or we're going to lose it. And if you go to Google, they will watch, they will record, they will observe. If you go to StartPage will filter your result. They'll take the question you ask, send it to Google privately from their servers. So Google never sees you. They don't know who's asking. They just see StartPage asking. And then StartPage gets the results, scrubs them up, cleans away all the privacy-invading stuff, and then delivers them to you privately, and then deletes all records of you having been on StartPage's server. So your IP address is erased. Your search query is erased. No record is made of your searches. No cookies placed on your browser. 100% total silence and privacy. And when you're gone and you turn off the computer, nobody knows what you were searching for, and I believe that's the way it should be.
All right. My guest is Catherine Albert. Catherine, how long before this gets challenged in the courts? There was just recently a Supreme Court ruling against a drug lord that the FBI was monitoring, and they were monitoring him using his mobile phone outside of his home. They would pick up and they would track him using the GPS device in his mobile phone. Now, in the United States, we all have a certain reasonable expectation of privacy within the four walls of our home, and the FBI wasn't invading this criminal's rights within his four walls. They were just picking him up when he was out in public. Recently, the Supreme Court said no, that he now has a right to privacy in public, that the government, the FBI, cannot tap his GPS on his phone or any other device without a proper search warrant. So that means, at least in part, that we all have the right to privacy in public. So with that as the benchmark landmark case, then how long before Google gets slammed down and this information that they're collecting gets overruled in courts?
Well, you know, the big problem with what Google's doing is that we agree to it. And, the best way to understand this is to take a look at what Gmail is doing. And, by the way, StartPage is coming out with a private email service this fall, so it will be competing with Google on privacy. So we need private email out there that's also free and easy to use, and it's not available yet. So what Gmail does, what Google does, when you send an email to a Gmail account or from a Gmail account, Google reads the email and extracts the keywords. So if you say Caribbean Vacation or Dear Mom, then they'll say, wow, that person is this person's mom, and they make that link in their database. In fact, the founders of Google, when asked what they wanted to become, what the ultimate search engine would be, they said, like the mind of God. And so everything they can get their hands on, they use to become what they consider the mind of God. They want to know all of it. So they're reading people's email. And you would say, well, how could that be legal? If they were steaming open the envelopes arriving in your mailbox, they'd go to jail. The reason it's legal and they can get away with it is because it states plainly in their privacy policy that they do that they will read your email, they will extract the salient words for market research purposes, for marketing purposes. They'll put them right into the government to censor certain sensitive topics like the Tiananmen Square massacre, which Google censored for years within China. You couldn't even get information that massacre had occurred through Google. So we already know this company has a bad track record of acquiescing to government requests. And the reason they can get away with invading our privacy is because we agree to it. And, you know, whenever people say to me, Google, I can't stop using Google because they have so many cool services and they're all free. And I say, when was the last time a multi-billion-dollar corporation gave you all of its products for free? And the answer is never. Those are not products. You are the product. And all that free stuff is just a bait to lure you in so that multiple times a day you will type into the mind of God all of the things that cross your mind so that they've been a massive leader in all of human history. It's mind-boggling. They know more than the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, and the IRS combined. They were even boasting that they can tell when you have a cold based on how you type into the Google search engine. Not making that up.
Yeah, that is frightening. My guest is Catherine Albrecht. Catherine, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about what you do, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I do my own daily radio program at kmashow.com. I've been a radio broadcaster for 5 years now. kmashow.com is the website where people can listen to the archives. It's all searchable. And, of course, I'm working closely with startpage.com. That's the private search engine that I would urge people to take that Google needle and pull it out of their arm, if they can. It takes about 6 weeks, by the way, to get used to a new search engine. So I'm encouraging people to make that change at startpage.com. And let me give out my email address if anybody would like to be a beta tester on that new email program that's going to come out this fall. We're accepting a limited number of beta testers, and I'll open that up, Bill, to your listeners.
All right, very quickly.
My email address, kma at spychips.com, KMA at spychips.com. Put the word beta email, B-E-T-A, email, in the subject
line. We've got to jump. We've got to jump, Catherine. Thanks so much for being our guest. Basketball at the top of the hour.